Results of exclusive annexation study, and this presentation will be by Robert Spencer, the lead financial. And John, Chief, run down what we've done on.
Okay. We have just a few copies, as the presentation indicates. These are preliminary results, and we made photocopies of the preliminary results just as they were available about a few minutes ago. So if people could look over each other's shoulders, that would be great. I'm going to just pass them up here. If you could pass them around and share them as well as you can. If you like, I will put a sign-up sheet by the door on your way out. You can put your email address. I'll be happy to email you the presentation that was delivered tonight. There's going to be subsequent updates, and we can copy you on the subsequent updates as well. My name is John Miller. I'm with Plan West Partners. We're the city's consulting planners. We do the city's regular planning stuff, as well as we're heading up the review of the proposed Scotia annexation. Bob Spencer with Meeting Financial is here to present the preliminary results of the fiscal impact analysis, which is one of the critical studies to the city council in reviewing the proposed annexation. And I'm going to just introduce Bob.
Okay. And
Bob, maybe what you can do is set the ground rules. If you have questions in the middle or questions at the end, or
you bet. Thanks, John. Good evening, council, staff, public. Thank you for coming tonight.
If I can interrupt you for one second. I'm not sure if the Fire Protection District noticed this as a meeting or if they're just in attendance, but the fiscal impact analysis was prepared for both the City of Rio Del and the Rio Del Fire Protection District.
We're going to be talking about the Fire Protection District too. So as John said, my name is Bob Spencer. I'm a principal consultant with Media Financial. I'll tell you something about our firm in a second. So we're here to talk about some preliminary results for the Scotia annexation study, annexation of the Scotia area to the hotel. I'm going to outline the presentation as set, but why don't we talk about ground rules? I think I would be willing to take questions as we go, but if you give me the ability to shorten my answers or ask you to hold them if I think the evening's getting long and I want to make sure I get through the material. So I think it's often helpful for people to ask questions as we go, and we can even have a little discussion about the part of the presentation we may be in. So I'm happy to do that as we go, but just for if it's okay with you, I have the ability to move things along. Okay. So tonight I'm going to introduce our firm, and more importantly, what is fiscal impact analysis? What does this term mean, and how is this tool used in this kind of situation? Then we're going to go over the three main components of a fiscal impact analysis: the land use scenario, the revenues, and the costs. And then out of those components of the analysis, we will generate some results and we'll review those at the end. As you can see, we have three scenarios that we looked at. So I'll be referring to these three scenarios throughout the presentation tonight: a status quo, which means, you know, continue things as they are now; a best case, what if things get better than they are now with more investment; or a worst case scenario, what if there's less investment. So we'll be covering that. So that's the outline today, these five parts of the presentation. And let's get right into it. Okay, introduction. Who the heck are we? Me Financial, we're probably the largest firm that's dedicated purely to providing financial services to local government agencies. We're mainly headquartered, and we provide services mainly in California, headquartered in Temecula. My office happens to be in Oakland, so I hail from Oakland. I have about 6-7 staff down there doing financial consulting services only for local agencies, and actually our office exclusively works in California. We are a subsidiary of Willdan Group, and some in the audience may be familiar with Willdan. Willdan, like Uni Financial, is also an agency, a corporation solely dedicated to providing services to local government agencies throughout the West. Willdan does more of the engineering, planning, and building side, Uni Financial on the financial side. So that's who we are. I've been in this business since in local government consultants since 87, so gosh, almost 20 years now. With Uni Financial for the last 6 years. So this is the kind of work that I'm going to show you tonight is very much core to my practice and expertise. All right. Our experience in this area, I forgot I had this slide in here, as far as doing fiscal impact analysis, what have we done as a company, what have I done? All these studies, actually, I've been intimately involved with just about all of them, except some of the ones down here. We've done incorporation studies. People know the Rio Linda, Alberta area in Sacramento. We just finished one there. We've done annexation studies, a lot for the city of Roseville. We did a massive annexation and incorporation study for a community called Wildomar in the county of Riverside a couple of years ago, where it was looking at both the city of Marietta annexing Wildomar or Wildomar incorporating as its own city. And then a number of other fiscal impact studies related to public safety services. So, again, this is one of our core lines of business. I do a lot of this work, and happy to see what we can do looking at the Scotia annexation. So, let's talk about fiscal impact analysis. Fiscal impact analysis is a very commonly used tool by local government agencies to evaluate proposed policies or plans or projects. And what it does is it takes revenue and cost factors. It's really looking at how would a policy or a project or a plan influence our government revenues, how it influences our government costs, based on a land use scenario. So you'll hear me talking about a land use scenario tonight. You'll hear me talking about all this stuff, revenue, cost, and land use scenario. You're basically asking, as a local agency, you're saying, well, if these 100 acres develop as a residential subdivision, what are the revenues that they're going to generate on an ongoing basis? What are the costs of services they're going to generate? And what's the net impact of that? What's revenue minus cost, the net revenue? That's the bottom line of this kind of analysis. You can think of it as very much a business kind of question, a financial question to ask. What is the impact of a given plan or policy or project on my... In this case, we're going to be talking a lot about the general fund, the city general fund, and the fire districts or general fund. So fiscal impact analysis focuses most primarily on ongoing costs and revenues. It doesn't focus so much on one-time capital costs. And that's another major part of the Scotia annexation that I'm certainly not, it's not in our scope, but there are others assisting the city with, what are the one-time costs of, say, utility upgrades or, the infrastructure, the roads? What are the capital-related costs of the annexation? That's really not the focus of tonight. The focus of tonight is ongoing revenues that will be generated by the area for the city general fund or the fire district, ongoing costs to pay for services. So you're looking at, what's the net balance on an operating basis, if you will, O&M basis. So that's fiscal impact analysis in general. Any general questions about kind of the scope of what we're talking about here or what we're going to get into? Okay.
Bob? Yeah. Can I ask you to describe the general fund as opposed to other funds,
sure,
just so that that's really highlighted?
Okay. Fiscal impact analysis primarily focuses on an agency's general fund. Why? Because all other funds, often called special funds or restricted funds, they have revenues and costs, but those revenues and costs go up and down in tandem. Let's say it's an enterprise fund like utility fund. Utility can raise rates to adjust revenues to match costs. Let's say it's a
a fund that handles grants. Well, the grants come in and they all get spent. That fund goes up and down with the grants. The costs, in a sense, are driven by the revenues. They match one to one. What's unique about a city's general fund, probably the fire district as well, is that you have revenues generated in a totally different way than your costs. Your revenues are generated by things like assessed value, sales activity, visitor activity, your hotel, motel tax. You know, so revenues are generated one way. They generate taxes. And then the council has the discretion to allocate those taxes to services. So service costs may be generated based on a totally different set of factors. Number of people in town, number of road miles, you know, for road maintenance. And so what's important about fiscal impact analysis is trying to look at how a set of revenues generated in one way are going to balance or not balance with a set of costs generated in another. And that's really what you're asking is for the general fund, where you have discretionary taxes on the one hand and public services on the other, how is that balance going to work? Because those may not go hand in hand. Revenues may not go hand in hand with costs, depending upon the area, depending upon the land use scenario. Is that what you're asking? Okay. And so, you know, we have these factors that go through a scenario. Out of that, we generate total revenue from Scotia, total costs associated with Scotia, and the net impact. So that's the bottom line we'll be getting to at the end of the presentation. All right, now I'm going to talk about the land use scenario. I think I just have a couple slides. Maybe just one on this. This describes the scenarios we use, the three scenarios, and the major differences in land use assumptions. Let me just give you a couple of background numbers, one in particular. The population of Rio Dell is now about 3,250. The population of Scotia is about 830. So if you want to think of it in ratios, which a lot of this analysis is, you'd be adding about a quarter to the city's current population. So how does that play out in terms of these scenarios? For the status quo scenario, the sale of property in Scotia, I'll get into this in a little more detail when I talk about property tax, is one of the major drivers of revenues because right now there's a very low assessed value on those homes. As soon as they go on the private market and get sold, that assessed value is going to go way up and that drives revenue. So that's why we pay a lot of attention in the land use scenario too. In the status quo, all those homes we assume would sell over the course of 4 years. And there would be a 10% ongoing vacancy. Actually, that's the current vacancy in Scotia. Worst case scenario takes 10 years to sell all the homes on the open market with a 25% ongoing vacancy. And in the best case, you do it all in 2 years, very hot market, and the vacancy even goes down to 5%. Commercial property, likewise, either a shorter or longer resale period, with different vacancy rates depending upon the scenario, as you can see. The new thing that we added in the best case, we actually added a new enterprise, a couple new enterprises, the renovation and opening up of the inn and a gas station. And I'll be addressing that in a little more detail later as well. In terms of visitors or tourists, this helps drive revenues because of sales tax. So we had to make some assumptions in our scenarios about visitors or tourists. Current level, worst case, no visitors, sort of the, you know, everything goes to heck in a handbasket. Best case, we actually get a more thriving tourist attraction, tourist destination, attracts 2.5 times the visitors that there are today. Population employment, this is the 830 employment. I'm sorry, I don't have it at the tip of my tongue right now. I want to say about 400, Dennis? 500? Yeah. Worst case, employment population lower. Best case, employment population higher. Again, with the scenarios, let me characterize these scenarios a bit for you. Status quo is what I would say you could count on 80% probability of something like 70-80%, say something like the status quo scenario would be what is closest to the outcome here, the real outcome that would happen. The worst case scenario, I would say, is we just tried to come up with what's the worst that could happen. That's probably a small percent. I mean, it's probably, what, less than 10, maybe 5%, maybe just a couple percent chance of happening. But we're trying to give council a sense of what's the worst that we could face following this annexation. And that scenario is primarily associated with, say, the mill actually closes. I mean, that mill closings are something that this region has had to deal with a lot. Not to say that there isn't redevelopment and reuse and a rebound after a mill closure, but we're looking really in the first 5 to 10 years. And so we're trying to bracket the outcomes that way with a worst case scenario. The best case actually is trying to anticipate, well, what if things take off? What if we get, again, a more thriving tourist economy? And again, there's probably, you know, 10, maybe, I'd say probably a little better chance of the best case happening than the worst case, but those are judgment calls that we can debate all night. So those are the scenarios. Okay, now we're going to, I think.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
Would you define what this ongoing vacancy is?
Sure. Meaning, at the end of our 10-year planning horizon, there's still a 10% vacancy rate.
The houses have not sold, or they have sold, and there are 10% houses for sale, for rent, or what?
10% houses vacant. 25% vacant.
Meaning that they have sold, so...
No.
No, okay, thank you. That's
yes, fine. Vacant. There are actually 10% of the homes in Scotia now are vacant. So this, and the same would apply to the commercial. Yeah, good question. It's a little complicated in Scotia because you have an existing population there. It's not a typical, you know, development project as this tool is often used. It's an existing population you're annexing. Okay. Let's talk about revenues. Here are the major revenues involved in that would be generated for the city's general fund. For the fire district gets a property tax, and then an item here I should have added, there's a special benefit assessment for fire receivers. The major revenues we're going to talk about tonight, the big ones are property tax, the vehicle license fee, and the sales tax. Those really constitute most of the revenues that will be received. So that's the list. We're going to talk about a couple of those in more detail now. Talk about the property tax. How did we generate the numbers that we generated for estimates there? We have these resale values for the homes, and I'll give you our assumptions there. Then there are tax rates, what percent of the property tax comes to the general fund of the city. There's the rate, the land use scenario I talked about, the rate of resale, and the rate of... And the vacancy rate that I talked about. And then out of those, out of the scenario, comes the tax revenue. Here's the,
John, behind, is my bag back behind there?
Because I've got a little pointer in there. And I thought, instead of me trying to point at the screen, I think I got it. Use this as a... So the resale values, we're assuming $175,000 to $225,000 a home, depending upon size. Again, that's probably the major driver for property tax revenue in the area, is the resale for these higher values. Because right now the homes, on average there, I would guess, are valued, we did look at this, $30,000 or so. I mean, this would be a tremendous jump up in assessed value and therefore property tax. For the commercial space, we assumed it would resell at these rates. We looked at local market. We looked at local market data to come up with these numbers. So these are reflective of the current local market in Rio del Mestrano area. For tax rates, I want to make a very important point here. 14.2% of the 1% base property tax. What is that? If your home is $100,000 on the tax rolls, assessed value, there is a 1% tax rate dictated by Proposition 13. So that's $1,000 in property tax, 1% Prop 13 base tax rate for every $100,000. That's this 1%. Of that 1%, then, all the local agencies serving your home get a piece of that 1% pie. Right? So when you go, when Rio Del annexes, if Rio Del were to annex Scotia, one of the most important negotiations you're going to have is going to be with the county. Because you currently don't have a piece of the property tax pie in Scotia, because that's not your jurisdiction. When you annex, you're going to have to negotiate with the county of Humboldt over a piece of their general fund slice that they currently have. A piece because the county is going to continue to provide certain services to Rio Del, to Scotia, that they provide to all cities and the unincorporated area, you know, criminal justice, court services. So they will maintain a piece. But they will have to give up a piece of their general fund property tax to the city because the city is now taking on some of the municipal services or all the municipal services, local services that the county supposedly was providing to Scotia. Now, Scotia's a unique case. It's one of the last company towns in the country. And so, in a sense, Palco, in a very real sense, Palco is providing those services. But from how the county and the city and this organization we call NAFCO looks at it. NAFCO is the Local Agency Formation Commission, which is a county-city body in Humboldt County. There's a Humboldt County NAFCO, every county has one. NAFCO is this agency that helps cities and counties divvy things up when you have annexations and things like that. NAFCO is going to look at it as this was county territory, now it's city territory, what share of the county's property tax should go there. So, for the sake of this analysis, we assume the average share received by all cities in Humboldt County. That is the 14.2%. On average, all cities in Humboldt County get 14.2% of the property tax. Rio Del actually has to get only about 8%. We did not assume 8%. We assumed that Rio Del would be able to reach an agreement with the county for the average of what all cities get. There are a couple other tax rates here. This has to do with the property transfer tax, which I can go into more detail if people are interested. The fire district gets about 4.1% of 1%. That is not in the fire district right now, Scotia, so we assume that the fire district would get its current share that it gets in Rio Del, the 4.1%.
Question. The 14.2%, would you assume that would occur just for the area in Scotia, or that when the city renegotiated?
No, that would only apply to Scotia. Yeah, you're only really negotiating with the county over Scotia and those tax rate areas, as they call. So here's what happens to assessed value based on our preliminary results. You're starting down here around 45-odd million in assessed value total for Scotia. Under the best case, it rises up to 100 and actually approaches 120. In the status quo, it rises up to, I think that's around 90. And it basically levels. There's a slight declining trend, but I wouldn't focus on that because that is more an artifact of how our model treated resales of homes. I mean, after they were sold the first time, then do they get sold again and again and again? So I would say you're going to level out at around, 90-plus million. And in the worst case, it does still go up. There's still some resales, but not as near as in the, about 75 or so million dollars in assessed value. So that's the assessed value numbers. And that drives property tax and vehicle license fee. So I'm not going to go to vehicle license fee, the other major source of revenue. Most of vehicle license fee is actually driven by assessed value.
Can I just ask a question about
the
previous slide there?
Yeah.
You were, it leveled out at somewhere right around 2010.
Yeah.
It starts to level out. Can you elaborate on the between 2007 and 2010?
Yeah.
And
this is that what we call absorption, or that's the initial resale period. So that's the period where we said, all the homes going to resell over 2 years or 4 years?
Yeah. Resale versus sale, those are the initial sales of
I'm sorry. Resale is not the right term. You're right. It's the initial sales of the homes to the first homeowners. That is what's driving this increase. Thank you, John. We don't assume any more resale loans, but that's what is driving that jump. Okay? Yeah?
Wouldn't that, as you went out over time, wouldn't those always go up by 2%?
These numbers, and your finance or accounting supervisor, Gordon and I and John had a long conversation about this. I don't want to bore you guys with economics, or maybe I can come up with some jokes. But it is called the digital science, after all. It's all in real dollars. If I say real dollars, do people wonder what I mean? These are adjusted for inflation. So these dollars are all the inflation is taken out. This is as if prices stay the same in this year and on out through this 10-year period. Now, what happens with Prop 13, when you're doing real dollars, you can see this slight decline because the 2% gets discounted back. I'd be happy to go into the
okay.
But yeah, there's a, when it comes to property tax, we actually have to do a discounting function, and that creates a slight decline. And people know under Prop 13, if you hang on to your house, it just goes up to 2% a year. But when we discount to real dollars, that can actually decline slightly. So that's what's going on there. It's only when you resell does it get. Okay. Vehicle license fee is also driven by assessed value. This was the approach that the governor took when he came into office. And on the one hand, he didn't want to raise the vehicle license fee back to where it was before it was cut during the Davis administration. On the other hand, he wanted to appease the cities, the League of Cities, and get cities back the revenue they had under the prior rate. So what he did is he turned the vehicle license fee really into a type of... it's coming out of the state's property tax share. The state basically gets some of the property tax, and the state is basically giving some of that property tax back to make cities whole where they were before the vehicle license fee was cut. But what that means is now the vehicle license fee goes up with assessed value. It no longer goes up with population as it used to. So now this revenue is also driven by that prior chart, by assessed value. The 17% of the fee still is associated with the per capita revenue, and so we capture that as well. So that's how we did VLF. Sales tax. We have sales tax from Palco and SOPAC, basically the industrial enterprises there. And then we have commercial sales tax. Under the scenarios, it's constant under status quo. In the worst case, mill closure, this sales tax goes away. And in the best case, it stays constant. Commercial sales tax, and I might add that this industrial sales tax, I believe, I'd have to look. But the majority of the sales tax is really associated with the commercial enterprises there. And status quo, again, it stays constant. Worst case, no visitor spending, and there's greater commercial vacancy, so it's going down. Best case, there's more visitors and a new gas station, which brings it up. And so running these assumptions through the land use scenario gets us to our... Yeah. So what we're talking about here tonight is when you annex an area, a local agency then applies its same revenue-raising authority to that new area. So you get your share of property tax now, you get 1% of taxable retail sales, just as you get 1% of retail sales in Rio Del now. Now you get 1% of the sales in Scotia. Same with transient occupancy tax, which I didn't analyze separately, but if the Scotia Inn gets up and running, there'll be a
right. And again, I might have misunderstood John last week that Pacific Lumber was not part of the annexation, that property was not.
The area, let's distinguish between who has jurisdiction versus who's the property owner. The city will gain jurisdiction of the entire area, including the industrial lands. But the industrial lands will remain privately held by Palco. On the other hand, some of the lands there will be possibly dedicated or might be dedicated to the city as public lands. Now, they will become public through an act of Palco dedicating them to the city, like the ball fields, like the streets. Possibly the rec center. So title of land will change with the annexation. Jurisdiction will be the city's over the entire area. Make sense?
It does, but I thought it was pretty clear when we were discussing the phase one site assessment that would not cover the Palco property because that was not part of the annexation.
You know, I may have misstated, but the annexation area extends basically from Eagle Prairie Bridge, and the city is assuming that it will annex all the way to the Stafford Bridge, South Scotia Bridge. So basically, most of the area on the west side of Highway 101, and that includes the industrial area. The Phase One site assessment that evaluates the whether or not the land is contaminated, and the city. Neil Carman is here with Winslow and Kelly. They're preparing the Phase One site assessment, and that's the city is preparing it for the lands that the city hopes to receive through dedication and the adjacent lands to that. But all of the land will be annexed, and these tax revenues, these are revenues that are currently being enjoyed by Humboldt County, and through annexation, the city will take those from Humboldt County and bring them into the general fund.
Yeah, that's a good point. The revenues aren't coming out of thin air. They aren't actually going to the county yet.
Right.
This will be changing jurisdiction. Okay? Yeah, that's right.
I'm just saying, since the public property will not be changing ownership, will the property taxes be based on whatever old property tax assessed value?
The current assessed value would be maintained. Now, that assessed value has gone up with Palco's investments in those properties. So actually, there has been some several millions of dollars of reassessment, I believe, over time, recently, with the investment in those properties. But correct, that they won't change from today's level other than the 2% Prop 13 increase. Right. Okay. Sales tax now a little bit on our the detailed assumptions. Commercial taxable sales is about $70 a square foot. The industrial tax is $710,000 today, and we're assuming then visitor spending of $10 a day, and currently 20,000 visitor days. So this 20,000 goes to zero in the worst case scenario, and it goes up to 50,000 in the best case scenario. So again, we're trying to bracket what might be some of the likely outcomes, some of the possible.
What makes up this $10 a day? Is that in taxes?
The $10 a day is taxable retail spending by a visitor. So that's buying a meal. That's getting a sandwich and a souvenir. Of that, that $10 generates 10 cents in sales.
Okay? I'm sure that Bob has made this clear, but economics is a dismal science, and fiscal impact analysis is wild hair. They have to make up assumptions for all sorts of activity that you really can't. And, you know, $10 a day in purchases by tourists.